There was some conversation today about the different research that we're involved in. This is some tagging and tracking techniques that we use primarily for the stock enhancement research, where, you know, once you raise the fish and you put it back out there, the job's benefit. You know, what is the value that you're getting? So there's a whole array of different tagging techniques available to you depending on what kind of question you're trying to get at. We tag all of our white sea bass with a small piece of stainless steel wire. It goes in the cheek muscle. It's got a code etched into it. Actually, you can see it right here. It's blown up. So to read it, you have to look at it under a microscope. But every fish is tagged, and so we can track survival of different batches released under different. White sea bass goes right in the cheek muscle.
Is there a way for fishermen to retrieve that and send it to?
The program that we have set up right now is fishermen are encouraged to turn the heads in at the landing. So we have freezers there and a pretty extensive public relations program.
The landing's only down here or another place?
Up and down the coast. And then we also have field technicians.
This is not people who are not on party boats, for example.
This is our favorite program, I would say, is actually the party boats, because what we can do there,
a recreational angler, I've never even heard of it.
Well, we got to do a little bit better job.
I've got a lot of white sea bass.
Yeah, on the party boats?
No, on my own boat.
Oh, on your own boat. Yeah, so the private boaters, it's a bit more of a challenge there. It can help in that regard. For example, the party boats last year, we looked at the statistics because they post the catches online, so we can actually see who's catching what and track it against what we're getting. And last year we were getting over 50% of the heads that were landed by party boats, so we were pretty happy with that.
Well, we probably put 50, 60 white sea bass on the boat last year. You didn't see any of those tags.
Yeah, and there was probably a few in there too.
Well, actually, we turn it back.
Yeah. We're promising with this, we actually implant a little acoustic tag in the fish, and then you can actively track the fish and see where it goes. Or you can use remote buoy stations, and as the fish swims by, the buoy station will automatically record what fish it was and the time it went by.
Oh my gosh.
We kind of put a hold on this research, though, because we're trying to find out. It turns out that the acoustic signal of the tag is right in the hearing range of marine mammals, pinnipeds in particular. And we've worked extensively. Some of the other research here that we're involved with as Don mentioned, more of the acoustic side of things. White sea bass and use the same technology with some of the deeper water rockfish species. So in this particular tank we have boccaccio that we collected, and so these are breeding tanks. We're trying to get the fish to mate, and these fish were collected from about 300 feet of water. So this tank has boccaccio, this tank has cow cod, vermilion rockfish, and starry-eyed rockfish. It's not under pressure, obviously using a real subdued light. It's pretty darn cold.
40, high 40s.
Talked about this morning, like sheephead and halibut, white sea bass, which are pelagic spawners. They release millions and millions of eggs into the water column. These are live bearers, so there's actually internal fertilization, and they release live larvae. So there's some interesting things that could be done with these fish. For example, if they don't end up spawning a month at a time, so it could be that you could just get a female that's been impregnated, bring her into captivity, and then let the process continue. So we're still learning on this. It's been a pretty exciting project. For example, to get the cow caught up, we used just hook and line techniques for the boccaccio, and our survival rate was pretty good, but the cow caught are much more sensitive. So we actually had to develop some portable hyperbaric chambers.
What did you do with the swim bladder?
We did some of that with the cow cod.
We have water supplies, so we maintain temperature. We will flush this about 1 gallon a minute through the system. We can maintain it under pressure up to about 150 psi, which represents about 330 feet down. So you can essentially bring a fish from 330 feet on hook and line to the surface, put them in the chamber, repressurize them back down to depth. And what this does is it'll shrink any of the gas that has developed in the body back into its blood and other, does not rupture. So what we do is recompress and go back down. Exactly. Here's a good picture of it. That's a fish that we brought up from 300 feet. The eyes bulged out, its gas bladder inflated, which forced its stomach out of its mouth. So what we did, threw him right back in here, repressurized him back down, everything went back in. We then spent the time, about 4 to 5 days, to slowly decompress him in this chamber, And those are the ones you see swimming around our tanks right now.
How many fish can you put in our tank?
The size we were looking for was about a 20-inch fish, which is a fully reproductive adult cowcod. So with, yeah, so for one. So for this chamber, we can put one cowcod or two to three of smaller species.
So we have four of these chambers. We go out and catch four and then come back in.
On the right side.
On the right side.
The right side.
Oh yeah.
And fortunately, yeah, we were working with, again, some fish
in a gap in the cowcod area, or are you further down south?
Wow. We actually were pretty successful just 40 miles off the coast here.
Just straight out.
Yeah. So anyway, we've been working with white sea bass for many years. The nearshore species are really pretty straightforward to catch. When you start working with some of these other species, you got to just make some adjustments, which we were able to do with this.
And brought up that they were not the appropriate size. Did you make an effort to put them back in?
We didn't actually. With the cowcod, the area that we were fishing in, we really didn't have to turn any.
They were all big.
They were all about the right size. We had one that was almost bigger than the chamber, which caused some problems. And it seemed as though the bigger the fish were, after we fully developed the systems here, we were getting pretty close to 100% survival, so we were pretty pleased.
The reason I'm asking about that is a lot of fishermen catch the wrong fish, and they bring it up, and now they've got a problem on their hands. Yeah. They've got to figure out how to get it back down. A lot of people take it back down on a weight, and then they pull, there's a release mechanism. Some people try to use Theralon. Is there anything that you've discovered that
My sense is, based on our experience with this, if you can get them back down quickly enough, I think they'll do okay. I know there's a fellow named Chris Lowe at Cal State Long Beach that's doing some tracking work for the platforms, and he's putting those acoustic tags in them, sending them back down, and he's seeing pretty good survival rates.
We use a weight release mechanism to get them back down, for some degree.
So I think that would work.
Otherwise.
Okay. Jeff's also working. He's got a little lab set up in there. We're trying to get into some thermal physiology work, looking at, for the different species and life stages we work with, what are their preferred temperatures, which in many cases is a mystery. You start working with some of these rockfish, and Boccaccio, for example, live in the shallower water, so when they're juveniles, they actually grow quite quickly, and they can tolerate warmer water. As they get bigger, their tolerance goes down, or it's changed as they develop. So for us, it's really important to understand that from an aquaculture standpoint, but it also has some real ecological implications as well, so it's good information to get.
Is it older, bigger, deeper? Is that what they want?
That's quite often the case. So for California halibut, white sea bass, their temperature tolerances decrease. They prefer cooler water as they get bigger. Which is, it's actually in a group of fish. They're flounders. And we can move in. It's a little bit tight here, but we can rotate in and rotate out.
It's kind of quick.
I know. Talk about fast.
So it's actually, there's 13 different species of Paralichthys, and this is the largest. So they're about 8 months old.
Uh-huh.
And so you can see what we've done here, and it was similar to what was in the poster. Because they live in a two-dimensional environment, we started to look at a rack-type system. We had a proposal on the table to look at perhaps putting a hatchery on an oil platform, and the platform was pretty limited in floor space, but it had a lot of vertical. It's a real neat fish to work with. One of the challenges, it looks like they grow a little bit slow, so there's got to be some energy put into that. It's kind of unique. The females grow faster than the males, and the sex is determined early in the life of the fish in the first couple months. So at one point we thought we'd get fancy and increase the water temperature to try and make them grow faster. We made them all males, and so they grew slower. So we kind of shot ourselves. It's a great species in terms of marketing. It's very similar to the Japanese flounder that's sold as harami in the sushi markets. It's closely related to the summer flounder and the southern flounder on the East Coast. The Japanese, the Koreans, they're culturing the Japanese flounder, again, very closely related in.
This is the same as the big California halibut?
This is the same as the big California halibut. Not the Pacific halibut.
Right.
It's different
right.
than the Pacific halibut.
How big will...
I don't know what the record... You probably know.
I don't.
It's a big fish.
The biggest one I've ever caught was 50 pounds.
Is that right? That's a good question. We probably have one. I'll show you the broodstock that generated the eggs for these. And we have one that's probably close to 50 pounds. Turns out, and again, I'll show you the broodstock. So these fish were all... the fish I'm going to show you now were all produced from eggs here. And so we have breeding fish, and the halibut are a little bit unique. They spawn year-round. So they're producing eggs almost
California halibut
year-round.
Oh, these things are so
We've kind of gone, again, the inside with the rockfish was more of a conservation focus. And the halibut has some potential for stock enhancement, although the populations seem like they're doing fairly well. What we're looking at in here is mostly spinks. In here we have some striped bass. There's actually a viewing window. You may have seen them already, but there's a viewing window on the side there if you want to take a peek. These we didn't raise here. These are come from a hatchery in Northern California. But it does look like it's a very, very nice species, very hardy species, and it tastes.
Oh, I put on my polarizer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why I can't wear my polarizer.
Yeah, a little bit.
There, sure. Oops. Oh. If you get it all the way up, you can actually see them. They come right up.
Yeah, like, I was seeing them, and then there were more bubbles.
Oh. The hoses are moving.
Yeah.
There they go. There we go. See them going?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're moving.
We're on the far side. And what we do is we pump it over here.
These filters are our main seawater supply.
You filter it first before you bring it in out of the bay.
We pump it out, filter it, and then it's distributed. And we have a raw line too where we don't filter it. That's where somebody wants to experiment with mussels or filter cleaner in the water.
It's a media filter that they use.
It's sand, rapid sand filter. Yeah. And then we also for our what you're going to see is our yellowtail hatchery over here.
Well, it's really interesting because the eggs, when they hatch, they have a pelagic larvae that's just like any other fish larvae. Swims 30 days, depending on water temperature. They drop out of the water column, lay down on the bottom, and then the eye, whichever side they lay on, migrates up over the body. It's bizarre.
The right one and left. You can have the mouth on this side, on top, and the mouth on that side, on the other side.
More like the claws. Remember, the big out.
It depends on which.
Yeah, they have different types of claws.
Right now, there's more in my body.
Now, pearl better, but they change sex. They all start life as females, and then through some process, one becomes dominant and it turns into a male, and then he's got a harem.
If the females are the ones, they get to be a male.
I don't know. I'm not going to go
there. You like the way you think. Anybody got any lemon butter and caper sauce?
Yeah. Verb line. Yeah. Yeah, these guys, you can actually, if you come over here, you can get a pretty good view. This is a species we're really excited about.
Boy, they are moving.
This is a jack, actually. It's California yellowtail, not yellowfin tuna. And these were raised from eggs that we spawned here, and they were spawned last summer. So we're getting into the breeding season. Actually, for many of the species, they just now start spawning.
And you're going to they're wonderful.
They're fantastic. Market size for these animals is about a 4 kilo animal. Actually, it's bigger. Most of the other species we work with is about 2 kilos, so 4 pounds. This is a little bit bigger at 8 pounds, and that's going to take about 22 months of growth. See, that you typically like to have in here. The idea would be to grow them up to about this big and put them in cages, because under this regime, you got to pump all the water and. It's just harder to keep good high quality water as opposed to putting in cages. So you can't get the high densities, and you got to put a lot of energy into pumping the water and putting oxygen in the water. The other thing is, if you have any kind of power outage or anything like that, you have some backup generators, and oxygen supplies as well.
It's just that
more of them in there. And then,
but you'll still do the 22 months out of this?
You'll still do the 22 months. Still be about 22 months. Yeah, the different species grow at different rates. These are actually quite fast. Striped bass, white sea bass. 22 months, you might only get half that size, so 2 kilo fish. Again, a lot of these species, you're looking at least on the front end, the higher end markets, you're going to be in your sushi markets. And many people don't realize it, but the good high-grade hamachi is all farm-raised. Yeah, because you can control the fat content by what you feed it. And so
Tuesday nights,
Now the Japanese they actually do stock enhancement. It's a pretty migratory species, so even with white sea bass, you can kind of keep track of them. And yellowtail, I think, would be certainly that kind of situation. So, but you know, in other countries, Japan, Korea, what they do is they produce a certain amount for market, and then the government subsidizes. If they overproduce, they say, we'll give you money, release them. And so that's how they're operating there. It seems to be working pretty well.
Good idea.
Are they more
Pacific Coast doing the tuna?
They're just down there by Ensenada. The ones I've seen are all north of
There's actually quite a large farm just south.
Just south.
That's what most people see.
And are those guys going like more than 3 miles offshore?
No. They're tucked in pretty tight.
As you drive down to Ensenada, the state doesn't have any.
But what about you? Are they going to be out short for those?
They may fall depending on how far they get.
Everybody's like, we sit around here watching them all night. We got our own lives to lead. You know? We're doing just fine on our own. We don't need these fish. So. Anyway. So this is kind of neat. The only other folks that are doing this are in Australia. So we're the only folks in the Northern Hemisphere that even are trying. Now, the Mexicans want to do.
Yeah.
So one of the things we'd like to do.
Go there. Well.
And then that's American fishermen with jobs.
Yeah. Awesome.
That's a vermilion. This water on our left side, we're running between 10 and 11 degrees Celsius. On our right, we're at 12 to 13.